Hello, this is Melissa, and today is the 19th of May, 2024. I hope that you are all doing well. I have had a good week, a busy week. The rain, I think, has stopped here, and we're about to head into the long, dry, hot months that are pretty typical for Texas summer. I've had so many good emails and letters this week, and I have been trying harder to keep up with emails and letters, so forgive the fact that I can't, but I am trying. So I just wanted to mention a few letters that I received this week because I think there were some interesting points in them and I wanted to share. First off, I have to say that there is a gentleman who has written Alan and now myself for many years and has never included contact information, so I can't write back and say, oh, that was a good letter, thank you. And one time years ago, there was a different man who wrote Alan for years, and finally at one point, I think it might have been on an RBN show, but on one point Alan just kind of casually worked it in there somehow to say hello to Rayman in Seattle. So today I am saying hello to Daniel in West Virginia and to thank you for keeping in touch. I appreciate it. And I bring it up today because Daniel mentioned in his letter something that I think will have a familiar feel to it for many of you. And that is the feeling of disgust that we can have for our fellow human beings. It's just, you look around, the complacency, the kind of ridiculous, terrible situation that we're in, and you see people just going along, oh well, not thinking, not looking up at the sky, not questioning anything. And it reminded me that Alan has often said he has two enemies in this system. Those who plan and implement this agenda, and the vast bulk of the populace who go along with it. So this is, it's not an uncommon reaction to have, to look around and say, okay, but so that's Daniel. Then I received another letter, and this is somebody who also writes often, and I always enjoy hearing from him. And he was telling me about all of the listening to Alan's talks that he's doing. He had kind of gone grouping by grouping, and he was telling me what he thought was particularly good. And he said the five times Alan was on Michael Herzog's show were all good. The second time, a guest host, June 22, 2007, starts off the interview by saying Alan was going to talk about solutions, and then introduces Alan and at one point calls Alan Michael. Alan takes no prisoners in that interview, and both him and the host talk over each other, which is so rare for Alan. He wasn't having any of it that night and spoke plainly as always. Okay, I've got to go re-listen to this and hear that particular talk. Alan not having any of it. And sure enough, oh my goodness. So this is the talk that I've chosen to go up today. This is Alan as a guest with a guest host on a show that was on RBN for a while called American Awakening, June 22, 2007. And I'm just going to say right off the bat that this might, some of you might find this annoying, but I think it's so educational that you should sit back with a cup of coffee or tea or a glass of water or a bag of peanuts and enjoy the show because it is really educational. Alan does talk over the guest host, and the guest host talks over Alan, and you just get the feeling, I have the sense here, that Alan has decided early on in this interview that he will not be able to reach the host, that they're not going to see eye to eye, and that they are not going to have what you call a give and take kind of conversation. And I feel that what Alan is doing here is he's saying, okay, there is an audience who is listening to this, and that is who I am trying to reach. I am trying to say what I'm saying for other people who are listening. And there's so many really good points that he makes in this interview that I want to play that for you. And I also say that just the dynamic between the two of them is worth listening to. Now, I listened to it fully two times again here, and then went back and listened to a few spots a couple of times, two or three more times. And there was one point when Alan said, it's the same old story. Money is the root of all evil. Now, the guest host interjected something there. It was hard for me to make it out. I had to listen to it, and I was on one computer. The speakers weren't that great. I couldn't quite make it out. I, meanwhile, printed out the transcript, because when a transcript is available, I like to refer to that, and I can just go through and go, now, what exactly did he say there? I want to say that this transcript was not done by the transcriber, my friend, the transcriber. And so I've got it in front of me, and I read it again. It says, it's the same old story. Money is the root of all evil. The transcriber transcribes here. Money is the root of all evil. The love of money is a problem. Money is the first game ever invented in history, along with the priesthoods. Now, I read this, and I think, no, Alan would not say that. So I'm on a different computer with better speakers, and I listen to it again. And this is what it said. Alan said, it's the same old story. Money is the root of all evil. Now, at this point, the guest host interrupts, and it sounds like what he's saying is, no, it's the love of money. And Alan talked right over him, and he said, it's not the love of it. You see, money is a problem. Money is the first con game ever invented in history, along with the priesthoods. And I'm like, okay, that's Alan. Money is the root of all evil. At another point in their conversation, let's find it here on my notes, on my transcript, the guest host is talking a lot about what you find in the Declaration of Independence. He actually lists out in a long segment five things that he said, I'll just enumerate them, and he does. And then he said, what say you, Alan Watt? And Alan said, that was fine for the time. Jefferson himself said that anything that's on paper is worth nothing unless the people believe it in their heart and actually work it into existence. That's the problem. People eventually deify leaders, or they deify the constitutional papers. They deify the object and say, with the Bible, what's written is there. And that said, leave it there, instead of going onwards with the information from there. If you don't live what you believe, if you think it's all been done for me, well, guess what? You've been tricked. If you believe that and allow others to do it all for you, then you'll find out it's the bad guys, and they have already taken over. That's interesting there that, you know, he says, including the Bible in there, that you deify this object. And I've had many people say, well, you can't change the Bible. You can't, you know, just decide you're going to take something and not take something from the Bible. And, you know, Alan would say, well, it's been rewritten many times, and there are many translations, et cetera, et cetera. But the point that Alan is making is that you must think for yourself. And Alan had thought for himself about money and said, money is the root of all evil. That's the first con game. So the guest host went on to say, well, everybody needs to read the great thinkers, like Thomas Paine, for instance. Now, Thomas Paine was a writer and a journalist, and he contributed a piece of writing that, it's an interesting timing, too, when you think about it. Common Sense, that he wrote, came out just in time before the Declaration of Independence. And if you look into his life and you see the kind of picked up by Ben Franklin and, you know, the contacts that he had, it's just interesting. But again, Alan wasn't having that, you know, the importance, as the guest host said, how important it is to go to other people and read, you know, find out their ideas and learn from them and kind of incorporate those ideas into yourself. Now, for Alan, what he said was, you don't win any battle until you've conquered yourself. To run off studying other people's definitions doesn't do anything except following something. You have to be your own champion. It goes on to say, freedom starts within the individual. It's a natural process of work where you analyze yourself from beginning to end. So it's this kind of sort of contentious back and forth between Alan and the host that's quite interesting. But I got to thinking about Thomas Paine, and he's often called the contributor to the American Revolution who just didn't get his just due, etc., etc. So I wanted to hear what other people were saying about Thomas Paine, like who talks about Thomas Paine nowadays, and what do they say? And in the sort of Thomas Paine revival, because I'm just going to say he wrote something called The Age of Reason, and that kind of, that was the nail in the coffin in his day, because it took his revolutionary ideas too far. He'd been over in France. He had been participating in the salons and cafes and intellectual groups around the French Revolution. And when he came back to America with this, it was just, you know, one revolutionary idea too far. But Ronald Reagan quoted him often in this in particular. We have it in our power to start the world over again. Now, think about that, because that's a very revolutionary statement. We have it in our power to start the world over again. I found a talk that was put out by Jacobin Magazine, and the founder and chief editor of Jacobin was interviewing a professor, a left-leaning professor, who was just over the moon for Thomas Paine and wrote a book about him. And I'll post that link so that you can listen to it yourself. But for sure, Thomas Paine gets his just due from people on the left and the far left. They understood what Thomas Paine was really saying and advocating, and they like him quite a bit. There's a book that Alan mentioned a few times over the years, and I would nominate this as a possible book club kind of book, and it's James H. Billington, Fire in the Minds of Men, Origins of the Revolutionary Faith. Now, Billington is interesting because he was a librarian of Congress, and I didn't know that much about the Library of Congress and librarians of Congress, so I looked that up this week, and I discovered we're on librarian number 14 since the inception of this position in 1800. So there haven't been very many of them. And because there were only 14 of them, I actually looked up each and every one and read a bit about them and their backgrounds. And you can't say that they're all cut from the same cloth, but there are some really interesting things that you'll discover about this important position of the Librarian of Congress. First of all, they nominate the Poet Laureate. They are, you could say, deciders of what is copyrighted and what is not. But most importantly, they just have access to the most amazing archives worldwide. And one of them was a Skull and Bones member. Another was the grandson of the attorney who defended Leo Frank. Now, some of you might not know who Leo Frank is, but he was a Jewish man. I think he worked in a factory. I'm not exactly sure what his position was, but he was convicted for the rape of, possibly the death, but definitely the rape of a young factory worker. And so, you know, and that's an interesting piece of American history and American South. And, you know, so a fascinating story if any of you want to look Leo Frank up. But I'll just say that everyone who has been a librarian of the Library of Congress has an interesting background, interesting education. So here is James Billington, Fire in the Minds of Men, Origins of the Revolutionary Faith. So right there, he is saying that revolution is its own kind of religion, right? Faith, religion. And right at the very beginning of the book, in the introduction, he said, "This book seeks to trace the origins of a faith, perhaps the faith of our time. Modern revolutionaries are believers no less committed and intense than were the Christians or Muslims of an earlier era. What is new is the belief that a perfect secular order will emerge from the forcible overthrow of traditional authority." It's a very interesting book, like I say. But one thing that you discover when you read Fire in the Minds of Men are some little interesting things about Thomas Paine and about revolutionaries in general. Paine was good friends. In fact, his best friend for a period of time was who I think he met actually in France, Bonneville. And what you find when you start studying Bonneville, I don't see his first name here, but what you see are the writers and the intellectuals and where they're drawing their inspiration for revolution and revolutionary ideas. Prometheus, fire carrier, that's where you get Fire in the Minds of Men. Pythagoras, nature, returning to nature is an important element of the revolutionary mindset of this period. And this is interesting if you think about the revolution that we are in right now, the green and sustainable revolution, nature. And Bonneville used Illuminist, Weishaupt, and Freemasonic ideas to come up with the symbolism. In other words, there's an occult origin to the way the revolutions were organized. Definitely Freemasonic, we know that, but occult in the symbolism and the art, the music, etc. I'm just going to read you a section here. Paine's closest American friend in Paris, Joel Barlow, imagined that there were natural sexual origins for festive revolutionary symbols. He traced trees of liberty to the phallic symbol of the Egyptian cult of Osiris, carried thence to Greece and Rome, where Bacchus was known by the epithet Liber, so that the phallus became the emblem of libertas. Barlow derived the Phrygian red cap of liberty from a Roman symbol for the head of the phallus, and he decried with solemnity the substitution of a maypole and the celebration of May 1 for the older and richer phallic festival. Men have forgot the original object of the institution. The phallus has lost its testicles, he wrote. So there is all this, all these early ideas of communism, all comes in to the American Revolution. I know there's going to be some of you that don't like to hear that. back to a little bit more of what Billington, remember, he's got huge archives, has uncovered about Thomas Paine. He writes, Thomas Paine, who lived in a ménage à trois with Bonneville and his wife from 1797 to 1802, believed that the Druids and the Pythagoreans had combined to provide an occult ideological alternative to Christianity. An essay on the origin of Freemasonry, written after his return to America with Bonneville's wife, and immediately translated into French by Bonneville, insisted that the natural sun worship of the Druids had not been destroyed, but merely diverted into Masonry. So, just really fascinating things there about revolution, nature, the occult, Freemasonry. And, of course, Alan knew all of this, and he's not going to go along with someone who says, oh, everybody should just read Thomas Paine, and then they'll know what liberty and freedom is. And Alan said, nope, it's in your own mind. That's where you start. That's where you do the work. You do not need someone to tell you what liberty is. You do not need their ideas. And isn't that the truth? Because if you take someone's idea, oh, how beautiful that is, why, it's just common sense. It's the subversive ideas that they work in for their own agenda, or they're a hired pen for someone else, and they're working it in for that reason. And so, finally, before I leave you with this talk, I wanted to share part of another letter that I received from someone else this week. And they wrote a nice letter, and then they included this. This is a Sufi story from Tales of the Dervishes, collected by Idris Shah. Once upon a time, Khidr, the teacher of Moses, called upon mankind with a warning. At a certain date, he said, all the water in the world which had not been specifically hoarded would disappear. It would then be renewed with different water, which would drive men mad. Only one man listened to the meaning of this advice. He collected water and went to a secure place where he stored it and waited for the water to change its character. On the appointed date, the streams stopped running, the wells went dry, and the man who had listened, seeing this happening, went to his retreat and drank his preserved water. When he saw from his security the waterfalls again beginning to flow, this man descended among the other sons of men. He found that they were thinking and talking in an entirely different way from before, yet they had no memory of what happened, nor of having been warned. When he tried to talk to them, he realized that they thought that he was mad, and they showed hostility or non-compassion, not understanding. At first he drank none of the new water, but went back to his concealment to draw on his supplies every day. Finally, however, he took the decision to drink the new water because he could not bear the loneliness of living, behaving, and thinking in a different way from everyone else. He drank the new water and became like the rest. Then he forgot all about his own store of special water, and his fellows began to look upon him as a madman who had miraculously been restored to sanity. So, as Alan has also said, it doesn't matter if you are in a minority of one. If everyone else in the world thinks it's this way and you think it's that way, doesn't make you wrong. And I think that liberty, as Alan said, it's in your own mind. It begins in your own mind. And once you're secure with that, once you say, it is truly an inside job, and it's in here. Then, I don't know, I think you might be happy living in a cave with your own special water and watching the world go mad. Have a good week, and I will talk to you all later. Take care.
Well, good afternoon, America. How are you doing, everybody? This is Tim Wingate sitting in for the traveling Michael Herzog, who will be back on Monday on the American Awakening here on the Republic Broadcasting Network. What a wonderful day. It's a great day for freedom, great day to move forward. You know, I was talking with a number of people over the last few hours, and we're commenting about all the negativity, all the things that everyone says how bad it is and it's getting worse and et cetera, et cetera. And no one's trying to close their eyes to that kind of thing, but the fact of the matter is, if you just give in to all that stuff, you're going to lose. If you focus on the negative and the bad that's happening, it could very well happen. What I'd like to do is let's focus on some solutions. Let's deal with ideas and concepts to make a better world, to make a freer America, to counteract these things. Yeah, people got guns. Yeah, people got numbers. Yeah, they got so-called legal authority. But you know what? There's actually more of us than there are of them. And the trick is who motivates the mass. Who motivates the mass of people? You know, psychologists, psychiatrists, people that are in the human development field, the positive seminars, there's a whole bunch of different names for these kinds of ideas, you know, the positive thinking seminars and just anyone who deals with human psychology and why people do what they do. We know that the rough estimate, and this is a rough estimate, 70% of people are sheeple. Now come on, you know that honestly. Look at the people around you. You know how it is. You've tried to talk to them about freedom. They just kind of like, it's too bad. Yeah, can't anybody do anything about it. Blah, blah, blah. Look, there are things we can do. And we're going to talk about some of the solutions to the problems and some of the ideas that we can do. But first of all, you in your own mind have to develop a positive attitude, a can-do attitude. We're going to try and help you do that today. Special guest Alan Watt is back. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back, America. This is Tim Wingate sitting in for Michael Herzog on the American Awakening. As we talked about just before the break, ideas, concepts, tools that one can use to liberate your mind, to have a freedom mindset, if you will. That's exactly what we need to have, is a freedom mindset. And the way to do that, or one of the ways to do that, is to feed your mind with good things, with positive things. You know, so often in the freedom movement, we get caught listening to all the problems. You know, we've got chemtrails, and we're going to be talking about a little bit of that with Alan when he comes on here. We've got so many issues that we can always point to. There's always going to be negativity around us. The battle is in your mind, and the battle is to have a positive attitude, a can-do attitude. And to do that, we have to have realistic tools, tools to be able to move forward and have that motivation inside of ourselves. You know, the scripture says is that you're supposed to not have a mind of fear. You're supposed to have a strong mind, and you're also supposed to gird up the loins, so to speak. In other words, you know, hike up your pants, you know, pull up your socks and roll up your sleeves and get into the work. One other thing here. Today is the second day after the summer solstice, so we're now on the downward slide till December 21st. Days will start getting a little shorter, so I hope you enjoyed yesterday. Well, we have our guest, as usual, on a Friday. And if you were listening last Friday, you knew we got knocked off the air, so we had him on Monday. So I am just thoroughly pleased to have Alan Watt here at bookending my time here, filling in for Michael while he's been traveling. Alan, are you with us?
I am, yes.
Oh, excellent, excellent. I am so happy that you're here.
Yeah, I'm glad to be on, yeah.
Okay. Well, Michael, you and I were talking a little bit earlier as we were talking about the program and ideas and different things, and you had brought up to me something that I had not known. And now, folks who listen to this, most of, quite frankly, you know, we have it goes out over the air over several FM stations. It's on satellite, shortwave. There obviously there are people that are tuning in through the internet, and we have a broad spectrum of individuals, and individuals who have listened to this program and anything here on Republic Broadcasting Network know that there are certain issues that are really starting to take off. Obviously 9/11 and the inconsistencies with that whole story, things you and I have talked about already about the Bilderbergers and the elitists at the top, the globalists. And one of the other things is this issue of chemtrails. And something is going on way up above the commercial airline route that planes are doing something or spraying something. And there's been all kinds of reports here and there. And you told me that, if I heard you right, that in Europe they're already admitting that they're doing this?
Yeah, just in the last week or so. It had to come to this because there's been too many people, well, maybe not so many people, but enough people talking out about it that they had to eventually address it. And so some of the governments have come out and admitted. See, now it's time, now that we've heard the Kyoto warnings and stuff and global climate change, yada yada, to use it as an excuse to that they're actually trying to save us all from excessive global warming. However, they're a bit late and a bit of a liar too, because they were spraying back in the 90s pretty consistently before we heard about the global warming and all the terror that's been drummed up since. Now, governments do not move quickly, as you know, and bureaucracies certainly don't. It takes many years of planning something on this scale to get it into operation. It takes years of making the chemicals that they're spraying on a world basis. Because I get photographs from all over the world. This is going on everywhere. So this has been in the manufacture for probably 20, 30 years beforehand to get us to this stage today, long before global warming became the con game issue that it has. What they're doing, in fact, I think, is to do with drugging. One of the reasons is to drug the populace as they take them through the greatest changes in history into a new system. Now, the day after 9/11, on national television, Rumsfeld came on, and he was asked what the government was going to do if there was another great catastrophe in a city, and what would he do about the panic situation. He said, we have aerosolized Prozac and Valium compounds ready to go, and we can deluge whole cities with this stuff.
Oh,
and that's when it hit me. That's when it hit me. My God, they've been doing it before this. They were doing it since the late 90s in Canada, for instance, on a daily basis.
You know, Alan, people who have been fighting fluoridation of the water have been contending that this side product of making aluminum, that they sodium fluoride that they needed to get rid of, it actually functions in some capacity.
It brings your brain structure down, your IQ drops, it makes you more pliable to government authority. They knew that in the 1800s and early 1900s with the fluoride, so aluminum oxide. Now, Teller, who is the guy who came out with the H-bomb, wrote a whole treatise about this particular spraying off the air syndrome that they thought about doing in the 50s, He said, if we can deluge the air with medical particles, he said, we can use electromagnetic frequency, standing waves, the Tesla technology, to basically create a circuit across the whole atmosphere, which would alter the weather. And he said a good side effect it was, it could make the people compliant by affecting their moods. Well, they've been doing it, you see. They've actually been doing it, yeah.
This is amazing. This is science fiction. I'm a big science fiction fan.
I don't go into science fiction. I go into reality from their own.
Oh, I understand that.
Yeah.
But science fiction is one of those story ways of telling a story that deals with the present, but you put it into the future, and it makes it a little more palatable and entertaining for
what
some
it
people.
Is called predictive programming, because all the biggest science fiction writers that have and do exist are paid by the Future Society to
really?
Write stories around these things to get us ready subconsciously to accept them when they actually happen.
Well, you know, that's rather, you know, maybe that's true for some people. It may be true for the 70% of the sheeple out there. The other 30% of us are more independently minded to varying degrees. And I've often seen science fiction more, as you say, as predictive, but not necessarily that that's something that had to occur, more as possibly a warning of what could happen if things didn't change. And the point I was going to bring up is that Robert Heinlein wrote a book back in the late 40s. It was called Sixth Column. And in that, you had a United States that had been overrun by Chinese, and the remaining Americans developed the technology that was using electronic beams that could pacify or actually put to sleep people of different races. And of course, the Americans were able to use it on the Asians who had invaded the country. And when we started talking about these EMP and the pulse machines and the different things that are out there, HARP that's up in Canada, and then these particles in the atmosphere that could create, I guess it's what kind of a cascading antenna effect or reflection thing, so that they can, much like shortwave bounces off of the ionosphere and can travel for hundreds of thousands of miles.
It can be focused on the ionosphere, and because they have 54 of them worldwide, they can put them up in convergence and aim them over entire continents.
See, now that, and this is the kind of thing, we know that from even the Republican convention that occurred back in New York, that they already, we can see the pictures of the machines that they had set up ready to focus on the crowd to either induce vomiting or
nausea
or something.
Yeah, well, that's what they found, as I say, 70-odd years ago with the early experimentation with electromagnetic frequency pulse waves and standing waves, was that with a secondary signal attached to it, you could actually induce thoughts into a person's skull, by the way. And the easiest thing to do was to alter the emotion, either make them very aggressive or passive. That was very easy to do by altering the frequency just a little bit. And they have been doing it. They've admitted they experimented
right.
on the people of Maine back in the
70s. Alan, hang on with that thought. We've got a break. We'll be back, folks. All right, America. This is Tim Wingate on the Republic Broadcasting Network, sitting in for the traveling Michael Herzog on the American Awakening. And our special guest, Alan Watt, is on the line. Was starting to make a point about something going on in Canada.
Yeah, it's going across the whole world. Every country that signed a treaty, it was an open sky treaty, it was called. And there's two treaties. One of them's for commercial aircraft. It's the one for military aircraft that's important. And all the signatories to that treaty have been getting sprayed heavily since about 1998. Some beforehand, by the way. So what they've been doing is, you can see them making the clouds in the sky. Anybody bores to look up can see them making the clouds in the sky, the crisscrossing of the trails, which spread and spread. They don't go away like the old trails used to. They put it with just water vapor. This is not water vapor.
Hello.
It's a polymer substance which was developed by the military as far back as the 1950s, which can carry other substances along with it. They can certainly alter the weather with it, but they're also, I'm certain of it, using drugs on the populace, because on certain days and certain colors of spray they use, from the white to the blue, when the blue sprays are being used in conjunction, you find everyone in the summer are almost drugged, very, very drugged in the towns. You'd also find them getting bouts of irritability. Everyone you meet is irritable when the stuff starts to wear off, just as you would if you'd had a high dose of a tranquilizer and it's coming out of your bloodstream. You're getting withdrawal symptoms. So this is happening all over the place because, you see, Zbigniew Brzezinski talked about this coming. It's his forms and techniques of electronic warfare used on the public, which they'll be completely oblivious of. And that was in his own book called Between Two Ages. And the chapter was called The Technotronic Era. It's technotronic warfare, which they're using on the peoples of the world as they change the whole new system into a brand new system. Makes perfect sense from a military strategy standpoint.
You know, that brings up something else that you and I had mentioned. We were talking about how that they haven't been hiding their plans from us whatsoever. And the fact that Zbigniew had put this in his book, and that he also was dealing very specifically with he was one of the architect, actually, or at least the front man for the Trilateral Commission. And I had mentioned that if you really want to know what's going on, at least from the position of the Council on Foreign Relations, you need to go read Foreign Affairs magazine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you see, this all came out of Britain from the Cecil Rhodes and the Lord Alfred Milner group, which joined together. They were front groups, an unofficial group of the British or Crown, actually for the Crown itself. So they could go into countries and get little wars started, and Britain couldn't really be accused of starting a war. The Crown would say, well, if they're private organizations, have nothing to do with us. However, once these little groups had their wars agitated and the people like the Boers attacking them in South Africa, then they say, well, we have to send in the troops to defend the English. This is an old strategy. And from that, they created the American branch. Any non-British branch is called a Council on Foreign Relations. And they set theirs up in the United States. The other group, which was designed to bring in a three-part world, three trading blocks, a United Europe, Pacific Rim United Bloc, and a United Americas, was called the Trilateral Group, which belongs to the same CFR group as a step higher on the rung. They also have the Council on Pacific Relations to deal with the Far East. They've been working on that since 1930 onwards. So this was on the goal. This whole present situation was being worked on 70-odd years ago. Karl Marx mentioned it in the 1800s, that eventually they'd create the same three trading blocks under a world power, a world government.
Yeah.
It's the same agenda. Hasn't altered.
Well, then we know that they're there to be informed, is to be forearmed. You know, at the top of the hour, I was talking about, what are some of the positive things that we can do?
Well, first of all, you cannot be positive until you know what's really happened in the past.
Okay.
If you're just positive, then you as well as joining the New Agers, they get taught positive thinking, and just be happy and don't look back at that express train coming up behind you, which is a great form of disarming the mentalities of the people. That's why they created the New Age. You have to understand how we got here, and you have to understand your histories to see why you got here. And it's only then you get any peace of mind, is when you've gone through all of it, you've broken through all the levels of the matrix, and you understand that you have personal peace of mind. Understanding clarifies an awful lot. It takes fear away. It takes the fear of the unknown away, because now you know. That's so important. But it also, you have to go back into all of the documentation written around the era of revolutions. Because
to understand what's going on, and this is what you deal with quite a bit at your website, cuttingthroughthematrix.com.
You have
materials, you have books, you have seminars, CDs, these kinds of things. Mm-hmm. So folks, you're welcome to go check out cuttingthroughthematrix.com. We'll be back after the break with Alan Watt. All right, America, we're back. The American Awakening. Michael Herzog on Republic Broadcasting Network. This is Tim Wingate sitting in for the traveling Michael, who will be back on Monday. And we are talking with our special guest, Alan Watt. And we're talking about, well, you know, I started off with positive things, and Alan brought up a very good warning, and that is you don't want to get sidetracked into just feel-good, positive thinking. I'm not so much talking about just the new agey, feel-good, positive thinking, the secret, you know, I can get wealth and money and fame by thinking about it all the time type stuff. What I'm really talking about, Alan, is things that we can do to stop this, to slow this down. I'm willing to completely admit that it's taken generations to get us into this situation, and it may take generations to get us out of this situation. I came across this quote, Alan. Says, and honestly, I do not know who said it. And it's been one of these things that's been floating around in the fax system and then eventually the internet. Says this: the world can only be turned right side up by the conscious collective activity of those who construct a theory of why it is upside down. Spontaneous rebellion alone is not sufficient. Without adequate advanced preparation, the old world will simply reappear after any rebellion, embedded as it is in the psyches, of the fabled people. An authentic revolution can only occur if there is a coherent and practical mass movement of self-conscious individuals in which all of the mystifications of the past are being consciously swept away.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true, too, because, number one, I'm not here to save a system. This system is unsavable. It never was my system. It wasn't yours either. You were just born into it. And it was created by the same people or their predecessors, generally in the same family lines, who are going on to the next phase of their system. And this is what's always happened down through history. People only fight when the system they've been born into is suddenly changing. It never dawns on them that it wasn't natural to begin with. So they're trying to save something which wasn't theirs, it was already lost. And we can't go on in this system, which is not a humane system to begin with. A system that says, I'm okay, Jack, tough luck on you, is not a humane system. It's a totalitarian system already, and it has been for quite some time. I've grown up in a socialist country, that was Britain, and literally you were a number from the beginning, and you were followed down through your life by the authorities, by that number. Everything you had to do in any major level, you had to get government permission and approval or licensing or whatever. And it's just the same here now. Because they haven't come to your door yet doesn't mean they're not doing it to other people. And that's been like that for a long time now. The system itself is corrupt from top to bottom. And it cannot stand.
So part of what... maybe we need to do is understand the past, understand how we got here, but also look at what can we do to change.
Well, what
some of us are here already. We've been listening. We're involved. We know what the past is. We know what they've done to us. We know about the numbering. We know about the dehumanization.
It's very simple. That's just very simple, and that's to for the first time. For the people themselves to debate what is the purpose of life in the first place. If you can't get that answered, you get nowhere. The rest of it is just the blind leading the blind. Because we've never had that debated. We take it for granted that we're here in one way or another to serve the system or to benefit in the system personally. That's all as far as most people ever think. And at one time they knew this during the Revolutionary Wars. All of this stuff was debated. And that's why government was supposed to be set up in the great experiment of the U.S. to see if the public could govern themselves with the least possible amount of government over the top of them. Because they knew darn well that if the people couldn't do it, and if the people did not keep control of their government over their government, the government would gradually take control over them. Well, that happened pretty quickly, you see. The government has become the master instead
of
less
than 200 years.
Yeah. And it was very quick, and Jefferson wrote lots about it. So did the other ones. They were well aware that hereditary families would creep in, dynasties, in politics, in finance, and then direct the course of the country. And that's happened.
You know, it's interesting that you talk about the structure of our system, whether it's Canada's system, whether it's Mexico's system, whether it's United States' system. Government, it by itself, once at a certain point it becomes institutionalized, it's like it switches roles. Instead of being, at least in our country here, government was originally created to serve the needs of the people. Now we find people are being told they have to serve the needs of the government.
Mm-hmm.
And that
and
it's not the
terms.
Way it's supposed to be.
Yeah. It's become the master. And it's an old story, you know, when people fear their government, then you're under tyranny. And that's happened. It's happened here. That's why the big stick, the same old techniques used in Europe over many centuries are now used here, because America has been joined at the hip with London for many, 100 years.
Well, you know, there are the theorists who do say that America never really did break away. They broke away politically, but not really economically, because the same money financiers, the same moneyed elitists, if you will, financed America. Didn't America even come back to Britain and borrow money to maintain its existence for a while?
Yeah, well, it's the same old story. Money is the root of all evil.
But I think
it's not the love of it. See, money is a problem. Money is the first con game ever invented in history, along with the priesthoods. And that's why you have coin. It's the same root word as coin, which is priest. It was the first con game that came between barter, where people decided what they wished to exchange and for what items they would exchange it. There have been ongoing wars since the Phoenicians took the money system all over the world in ancient times. And it's allowed privileged families to rise up above the rest, who understand this game. It's thousands of years old. It doesn't matter what money is, by the way. Money itself is the con, and that's our problem. We've never debated what the purpose of life is. Is it to simply accumulate this strange thing called wealth, or are we here to serve each other? That is a dilemma. It's a paradox. If we go the way of the New World Order, we will be a bunch of robots serving them, and the time is running out for everyone, including the youth. We are the last generation with the knowledge of the histories to stop this, because the youth don't have it, and they shortly will be chipped like everyone else. And when that happens, you will no longer be an individual who can think coherently as an individual.
Well, okay, I can see that possibility. Would you you were talking about back to Jefferson and the ideas, the experiment, the American experiment in self-governance. And we had Edwin Vieira on yesterday talking about homeland security, or constitutional homeland security. And I love his idea. I love his concept. There's only one weak point in that, and once again, that is getting enough people to go along with it, to change their minds and stand up and say, I'm willing to pledge my life, my possessions, my sacred honor in the cause of liberty and freedom. that's the only holdoff. And I've tried to bring this out to people as I've talking, or I was talking, listen to that English, as I have talked around the country, different seminars I have put on, as well as articles, and I wrote the idea of an American shibboleth. Are you familiar with the term shibboleth,
mm-hmm. yep.
Alan?
Yep.
Okay. Just for the folks out there, a shibboleth, quite simply, is a word or an idea, a concept that causes a division. It makes you have to make a choice between something. The ancient story goes back to, I believe, the book of Judges, chapter 12, where you had two tribes of ancient Israel that were battling an enemy, and one tribe called to the other tribe and asked them to come and help. The other tribe says, no, we'll let you fight the battle. Well, the tribe that fought won the battle. They got all the booty, they got all the possessions, they got the animals and everything. The tribe who sat it out says, well, we want our share. And the tribe who won said, no, you didn't participate in the battle, you're not going to get your share. So the tribe who didn't do anything then decides to invade their cousins and try and take some of the booty. Well, there was a battle and they got their butts whipped. And as they were trying to escape back across the river to their own territory, sentries were posted by the tribe that had been attacked. And they simply had a simple word, and that is shibboleth, that they had to say. And it means nothing more than a torrent of water. The word itself doesn't mean anything. It's the pronunciation of the word. That S-H, sh sound was not in the dialect or the language of the tribe that had attacked them. They would say just the long S, the S, shibboleth. That way they knew they were not part of the proper tribe, and they could not speak it, and it became a code word or a password or a sentry word, if you will. And down through the centuries, the term has come to mean something that makes a division. I've maintained, and I still maintain, that the five premises that are articulated in the Declaration of Independence is an American shibboleth. Either you believe in these or you don't. Now, how they're fleshed out is just a question of a form. It's not the substance. This is the substance of our belief. This should be the substance of our mindset. And I'll just enumerate them for you very quickly. Number one, the law that the positive laws of any government are always subject and subordinate to the natural law, the laws of nature, and nature's God. Number two, that all men equally entitled to certain unalienable rights, whether or not it is convenient to public officials or special interest groups, domestic or foreign. Three, that governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, and therefore can never claim any unjust powers whatsoever or impose any powers from the top down. Four, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter and abolish it and institute new government, the people being always morally, politically, and legally superior to any form of government. And number five, that when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object shows a design to reduce the people under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security, for the fulfillment of which right and duty the people must be organized, armed, and disciplined in a well-regulated militia. The Second Amendment declares to be necessary for the security of a free state. What say you, Alan Watt?
Well, that was fine for the time because, as Jefferson himself said, anything that's on paper is worth nothing unless the people believe it in their hearts and actually work it into existence. And that's just the problem. People eventually deify leaders, or they deify constitutional papers. They deify the object. And same with the Bible. It's written, it's there, that's it, leave it there. Instead of going onwards with the information from there. If you don't live what you believe, you think it's all been done for me, well, guess what? You've been tricked. Because if you believe that and allow others to do it all for you, then you only find out it's the bad guys that have already taken over. And they were well aware of that too during the revolution, that the public would have to believe in it generation after generation, and that everyone would have to know it. Well, as you know, it was taken out of the schools long ago. It was also worked on almost like a Hollywood fictional type of thing since prior to the 1950s. They altered an awful lot of stuff. They started to take out information from history classes, and now you have a really dumbed-down population that really gets the reality from television and dramas rather from history. So that's the problem. Anything that's on paper can only be of value if the people actually live it in their daily lives.
Okay, so how do we get people then to attach themselves and become one with the substance and not with the form?
You'll never get the masses, as we know. That never happens in history. It's always the few who are willing to go into the depths and go beyond the world, as it's called. It's always been called this in all ages, going beyond the world, meaning the world that you understand or you're brought up in, getting beyond it all to think the deeper, more profounder things of nature and what humankind is, beyond the selfishness and motive, the higher aspects. Some people call it the spiritual aspects. It's going beyond all of those things. That's when you start to realize that the world you're now in is completely corrupt. And it was corrupt at its foundation because there was the money system and the profit motive. Yeah.
You're right. There's a lot of different reasons, but there is the minority. We can't necessarily totally convince the majority. That's true. But we can influence them. We can get them to go a certain direction for a while. And so it's like what I believe it was Sam Adams says, that all it takes is a vociferous, a loud, a out there, in your face minority lighting brush fires in people's minds. We don't need to have the big numbers. We just need to have people who are willing to stand up and be an example and to lead. For too often, we sit back.
Here's your problem here, too, that really is a real problem.
Yeah.
It's well understood today in science and psychology.
Well, hang on, Alan. I hear the music coming up. We'll get back to the problem, as you want to articulate it. And we'll be back, folks. Well, welcome back, America. This is Tim Wingate here on the Republic Broadcasting Network, Michael Herzog's program, American Awakening, and we have our special guest, Alan Watt, with us, and he was talking about a problem that he perceived. Go ahead, Alan.
Well, you see, in all ages, there's one type of human that's always risen to the top in all peoples, and it's called the psychopathic type. The psychopath is almost a deviant creation. It used to be called that before they had the term the psychopath. And what you've had over centuries and centuries and centuries is selective breeding between the psychopathic leaders who do not have the qualities of compassion and empathy for others around them. They are not bonded to others around them. They are pretty ruthless, but they do climb to the top because they are ruthless. And they do it just as much in business, in big business, as they do in politics or anywhere else, or in royal families. So what we have today is also a group of the higher ones who are also scientists now, because they pick the psychopathic types to put them in the big colleges, train them to be scientists in warfare departments for creating good and new viruses and bacteriums, or Tesla-type technology, standing wave technology, to eventually affect or kill the rest of the people. That's what we have to deal with. Now, the psychopath always can sniff the way that the public are going or complaining, and they tend to come out and speak on behalf of the public and then start to lead the public. That's why many revolutions, you'll find that people end up worse after the revolution than they were before, and they can't quite figure it out. It's because the psychopaths get right in there. That happened with the communist revolution too. The psychopaths came in like droves. They didn't want to live like the ordinary people below them. And since the 1950s onwards, they started to give themselves higher pay increases, etc.
But Alan, not everybody. That doesn't happen with every situation.
It's almost all situations in this present.
Don't you
economy.
Have various levels of it? I mean, America has been taking some time to slide this way. Certainly, there are authoritarian personalities that can rise to the top as people get lazy. They kind of go on automatic, autopilot, and figure, oh, the system's set, the system will run itself, and they don't keep watch.
No, the U.S. has had the problems and the share of them since its foundation. I mean, how long was it before you had all the other wars that started, never mind the Civil War, and then the many wars since? There's been one war after another. And who benefits? It's no different than today. Or that story you read from the biblical stories.
Mm-hmm.
It's to do with loot and booty and corporations. Halliburton somehow has been given the authority to rebuild all over the world on behalf of the United States. Halliburton is still a private corporation, international corporation, with many of the top psychopaths who are the top shareholders. So nothing has really changed. It's about looting and booty under the guises of protecting or bringing civilization to, or bringing democracy to, or giving a religion to the pagans. It's the same old story, the same excuses, but behind it all is to do with looting and robbery.
All right. Yeah. Well, listen, folks, we're going to be back after the break with Alan Watt. Alan, you know, it seems to me we've got a choice of either submit or resist. And I think we need to figure out some ways of either doing either. I'm not for submission, folks. We'll see you after the break. Well, welcome back, America. This is Tim Wingate on Republic Broadcasting Network, sitting in for the traveling Michael Herzog on The American Awakening. We have with us our guest, Alan Watt. And we've been talking about, kind of bandying back and forth, all the issues that are going on in this world, and that we have, it seems to be completely overwhelming, and bad people have been in control or have vied for control for thousands of years. Throughout history, there's been, a move toward that. And the sad thing is they're not always the smartest of people. You know, I like to tell jokes. I like to poke fun at some of these people. You know, sometimes they don't like that too much. They get rather upset and they can be rather vindictive. Talking with our special guest, as usual on Fridays, we have Alan Watt. You still there, Alan?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. You know, I was looking at your website here, and I really like, by the way, folks, it's cuttingthroughthematrix.com. I like your official logo. And, folks, if you can't see it, he's got the all-seeing eye above the pyramid, and Alan is suspended in midair in a karate gi with a black belt executing a... looks like a flying kick to the all-seeing eye and knocking it off the top of the pyramid. I like that imagery, Alan.
Yeah, it's about time it was knocked off because we've had it around too long.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, it's been around. There's as we were talking.
Yeah, you know, it's too, even on the DARPA logo.
Uh-huh.
Their official one, which they've taken down, was all the same thing. They had the pyramid there with the all-seeing eye,
mm-hmm.
and I guess it was them at the top looking down through the light to the masses down below. You know,
right? It was like a light beam coming out of the eye, going across the whole globe.
Yeah,
the Total Information Network.
Yeah.
Yeah, good old Poindexter and his
freedom
creation. As far as that goes, well, Alan, let's deal with some real practical stuff. stuff here. Now, we've talked about all the negative and how bad everything is, and that we need to understand where we came from, and maybe we need to understand the construct of the matrix, and that it really is what's inside of people that makes the difference. You have a course in deprogramming?
Yeah, I used to teach people privately, very few, not anyone who asked, because I don't believe in wasting my time with those that think that money can simply buy ultimate truths. So you pick the people who've already done the journey, they've done the start of the journey. In all ages, you have the world of the dead. Same in the New Testament, you had the dead, where the dead bury their dead. You can't wake the dead up. You have to try and get up themselves. That's when, of course, to try and walk. That's what that always meant. And so you look for those who've been asking the right questions from their own hearts.
Right.
And those are the ones that you can fill in. They can go beyond the natural, beyond just the data of the world, because they have something else in them. And it's a tremendous compassion that they have for other peoples all over the world, not just their own particular group. I think the U.S. would get far more approval within their country and around the world if they stopped bombing other countries abroad, especially the Middle East.
There's no doubt about that. There's no doubt. There's a wonderful little booklet out on the Internet that is called The Myth of the Innocent Civilian, which is a wonderful little treatise on how that none of us are necessarily... our hands are clean, because we have been allowing this, at least some have not been actually protesting this, and we've created a negative situation in the world for the reputation of the USA. And so recognizing, though, as you've already mentioned, that there's these bad guys at the top, and they've well entrenched, and they've got the money and all these other things. Well, if we accept that money and this kind of power is not real power and is not the thing that we need to go toward, what are the techniques, what are the tools that we use to bring liberty and freedom back to a group of people?
Again, I don't think you understand that most people never knew what liberty or freedom really was.
Well, can't we show them what it is then?
They see it, they see it in a tunnel, the tunnel that they were born into, or Plato's cave, as he would have called it. They think it's the normal in their lifetime, or something they've heard about in someone else's lifetime. They don't realize that freedom starts with the individual mind. And it's a matter of letting go indoctrinated concepts of the
people. Okay, Alan, I get your point. And let's go then and use the analogy of the Matrix movie, since that's what you adopted for your website, Cutting Through the Matrix. And we have this situation, if everyone remembers, at least in the first Matrix movie, where Neo is taken into the construct, and he's walking along. This is where he sees the woman in the red dress, and he's in the construct. He's being instructed by Morpheus to look at all these people around you. Every single one of these people thinks they're alive, think they're free, think that this reality is true, and every single one of them can become an enemy, and one of them then morphs into what they call the agents, or variations of Mr. Smith. And he's warning him that you have to be careful. You have to find people that have been asking the right questions, that are doing the right thing. And now this follows along. This is a parallel with scriptural teaching of the remnant. And Isaiah, there's a wonderful American writer, I don't know if you're familiar with him, his name is Albert J. Nock, and Nock wrote a wonderful little piece called the Isaiah's Job, and it was a retelling of the story about how God told Isaiah, I want you to go and tell these people that if something's going to happen, they need to repent, they need to change their ways. However, they're not going to listen to you. They're not going to pay attention to you. They're probably going to throw you into jail, and they might even take your life. And I say, well, why should I go? And the Lord says to him, it's because your message is actually to the remnant. The remnant will be heartened by what you're saying. The remnant will be strengthened by what you're saying. And by getting up there and being out there and speaking the truth, yes, the masses aren't going to listen, but those with ears to hear and eyes to see will respond to the message. And that's what we need to do, isn't it, Alan?
It is, however,
find those people.
However, it's such an incredible education that must be given. And you can't just give ultimate truths right off the bat. You've got to bring people up through levels of consciousness until when you give them certain truths, they'll understand. If you tell a person at the bottom the ultimate truth, it goes right over their head. They don't understand. So you've got to prepare a person's mind to understand. That's a lot of education. And that's the thing. You can't do it in an hour, 2 hours over a radio, like a rah, 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 let's save the world type deal. You cannot do that. It's a very deep education. Now, very few people, some people do have it naturally. They've already gone through the process. They've been born being aware, but very few in all ages. That's how it's always been. And
well,
the remnant in all ages.
How do we get that
cultures.
Started, Alan? How do we get this education process started for those who have ears to hear and eyes to see?
They have to get in touch with one of the few who are teaching the right things and not the misleading things or the things which are to try to save the present system. We can't save something where the elite have already, they're already shifting the system, and it has been shifting under our feet for
a long time. You're right. I think we're under a paradigm shift, and I think many of us who are sensitive to these things have sensed that this paradigm shift is occurring. And I'm not talking about saving this present political system. This is just one form. See, the whole idea that I understand it is, as Jesus was talking to the Pharisees and condemning them and saying that you're whitewashed tombs, you're whitewashed sepulchers. Mm-hmm. You appear to be all bright and clean and wonderful on the outside, but inside you're full of death and deadness. The issue is that form is supposed to follow substance. And in our situation now, we have empty, dead-filled forms. We have whitewashed monuments all over D.C. and all over this nation that are full of death and destruction
also,
and decay.
A lot of them are also called churches because in all ages, those who give the teachings know darn well that as soon as they're gone, in come the ones who corrupt it. The majority of the public want ritual. They want fancy shows. They want something familiar, cozy,
sure,
and happy.
Sure.
So they become
dead. We don't
dead.
Care about that, right?
So
we don't
become,
care about
so
that.
So they become dead very, very quickly. And that's
well, yeah,
always
so what?
Been
so what,
the
Alan?
Way.
We
yeah.
want to reach the people. We want, don't we want to reach the people who have eyes to
that's
see
right.
and ears to
however,
hear?
However,
so how do we get the message out to
you
them?
You must also reach out of your own religion to those of others.
Okay,
let's
say that we're
problem.
Doing that.
Yeah.
Let's say that's
the
done.
Problem. And a good start, as I say, would be to stop killing off people in the Middle East, men, women, and children.
But to do that, Alan, to do that,
yeah.
what you're saying, to do that, then we moral people, we aware, we awakened, we spiritual,
uh-huh.
we who understand liberty and freedom, we who have touched on what you call the ultimate truth, we need to be in power to be able to stop that happening.
You can
unless
also
you've got
do,
some other way of doing
what,
that.
What
how do we stop
do,
it?
What you can also do is to demand where your tax money starts to go. No one does that. Now, when you acquiesce by your silence, you're acquiescing that it's going to abortion.
All right.
It's going to
inoculations. Okay.
It's going to create the war machine to kill everybody else and to create our own chains because we're going to use all this technology on us too. And I would also suggest that if you're going to put anybody in power, a position of power where they can make laws over you, then you better have them. Rather than Bush having the American society tested psychologically, we have each one of them tested, even your local schoolmaster, for psychopathic traits.
There we go, Alan. Great. We got two ideas, folks. We'll be back after the break, and we'll pick up where we left off with some ideas on what to do. Welcome back, America. Good afternoon. Tim Wingate sitting in for Michael Herzog on the American Awakening on Republic Broadcasting Network. Just before the break, we were talking with our guest, Alan Watt, who has a wonderful website called CuttingThroughTheMatrix.com. And we were talking about some specific things that those of us who are enlightened, those of us who understand the nature of freedom and liberty and understand that this political system is just a transitory system, it's artificially constructed, and it has basically gone totally out of control. It's like a crazy, like Frankenstein's monster in some respects. And just before the break, Alan brought up two great ideas on how we can actually start to work against the system, things that we can do to make it better. And one of the things was is to withhold your approval, from what the government does in bombing innocent people, in hurting innocent people. In fact, this goes right along in line with We the People Congress with Bob Schultz out of New York, where they are saying that based on a Continental Congress document, a bill that was passed in 1774, that if government is not responsive to the people, that the people have a right to withhold their monies from the government. If that's what's going on, then those of us with conscience should be doing whatever we certainly can.
And even the timid ones can still, you know, pay their taxes if they want to, but still put an objection and tell them what they object to, and they give this money under force and duress. So,
at the very least, they can play on their Congress people to not vote for any new spending. You can reduce your own spending.
I don't think that's the way to it. It literally will take the people. Enough people just to literally lodge complaints as to where the money is going, and they object to the fact that they're being coerced by force, basically, or the threat of force, into paying it. Money that's going to change the culture, money that's going into technologies which will dominate them, that's where it's going. We're building and creating and buying our own chains.
But, Alan, I think that really just because we lodge a protest, they go, fine, protest all you want, just keep giving us the money.
Yeah.
At a certain point, we have to just pull back and say, that's it, no more. And we know that they're getting desperate, and there's a lot of talk.
The fist is uncovered now, that the velvet glove is off.
If the velvet glove's off and you know you're in a fight, then it's time to start fighting.
They've had this plan. They knew they'd bring us to this stage over 60 years ago. They knew it. They've been building up for the chaos that's going to come. They've published their plans for the next 30 years in the Department of Defense's documents from Britain, the head of NATO. Every NATO country signed it, and they're all preparing for massive upheavals in the very near future, because they know what they're going to bring on this world, and they know the public's reaction to it.
Okay, so what, Alan? What are we supposed to do? Lay down and submit?
What I'm saying is you don't do what they expect you to do.
I agree with you. So what do you suggest we do that they don't expect?
What they don't expect is people to do it in such a way they can't imprison them right off the bat or kill them for protesting. That's the first thing. These are the masters of war here. What they really
in other words, we're talking about no frontal assault. We have to be wise as serpents and harmless as doves.
Absolutely.
We have to be as the little foxes that spoil the vine.
These characters have played this game over and over down through many centuries, and they know how the public will come on head on, like an unorganized mob, as they call them at the top.
Yeah.
And that's what they want, because they want to say, look, there are crazy guys running around called militias and forests that tried that right after the Oklahoma City deal.
They showed that all over television.
And they want that to start so they can tell the public, the passive public, look, there are crazies living amongst you. We must be under complete martial rule right now.
Edwin Vieira yesterday really laid it out that we do have the rules, we do have the tools available to us if we would just exercise them and have have the courage to do that. Well, your second point that you made before the break was you're talking about psychological exams for elected officials. I would say that all public servants,
all bureaucrats,
they all should go through a psychological exam.
Yeah, because right now Bush, under the auspices of United Nations, the United Nations, by the way, is throwing all the laws out there. Every country signs them into existence. And one of them is they want the whole world's population psychologically evaluated every year, man, woman, and child, from birth, right on. And Bush mentioned this briefly about 6 months ago. He wanted every American citizen to be tested to see if you maybe you harbor some terrorist qualities there and you don't know it.
They're not looking for terrorist qualities, actually.
I know. So what
they might be looking for a little individualism.
That's what they're looking for.
I'll tell you what else they're looking for. They're looking for the authoritarian personality style.
The leadership qualities is what they're looking for.
I'm not sure that authoritarianism is leadership.
Rather than let them do what they want to do, let's change all this and say, no, all you guys who want authority over us, since you're there to serve us, must take this test, this psychopathic test, you see.
Yeah.
And you'll find out, you're going to find you're going to have a very quiet Washington, D.C. after it's done.
Excellent. We got a break coming up, Alan, so we will deal with this. And folks, I'm going to give you some tools after the break on how to figure out what authoritarianism is all about. Stay tuned. Welcome back, America, to the Republic Broadcasting Network. This is The American Awakening. Michael Herzog, I'm Tim Wingate sitting in for Michael, who will be back on Monday talking with our special guest, as usual on a Friday, Alan Watt. And we were talking about, right before the break, I promised you some tools. Alan had brought up a great suggestion about giving psychological exams to all bureaucrats, all public servants, to determine whether or not they're fit to be our servants, or whether they'll try to usurp our authority in place and place theirs in. It is that authoritarian mindset that is amoral. They'll pretend to have morals. They'll go to church. They'll do all the right things. But behind the scenes, they have no morality, and they're only interested in the acquisition of power and wealth. So if we can understand this, maybe something along these lines, this test, that would be something, or at least a framework, to have all public servants follow. What do you think, Alan?
Well, what you've just described is a classic psychopath, in fact.
Yeah.
Because the psychopath really only respects someone more powerful than themselves, and when they get governments going and they infiltrate, then the government becomes like a military organization with superiors all the way down. And they do crave power, but they really respect the person above almost like a god, because they wish they had more power themselves. They are truly psychopathic. And what you have today across the whole Western world, and now it's the Far East as well, you're voting in the left-wing bunch of multimillionaire lawyers or the right-wing bunch of multimillionaire lawyers. I think really lawyers should be banned from even applying to get in there at all. We don't need lawyers for that. Normal people just discuss things for normal people. We don't need lawyers to confuse the issue.
I would agree, and there are some that contend that the original 13th Amendment to the American Constitution was referring to a reaffirmation of no titles of nobility, specifically dealing with lawyers and being esquire and from the London bar and these other things. And I don't know if it's true or not. I've seen evidence on both sides. At this point in time, doesn't make any real difference. But I do understand what you're saying about lawyers. In fact, even in the New Testament, that was one of the major problems, is that they were the doctors or the lawyers of the law, and had convoluted and constructed the law in such a way that it did nothing but hold down the common person, and they themselves would just flaunt it. They would do
when
a little bit. They'd be technical.
When you need a professional person to interpret something for you that's supposed to be simple, then you're being fooled. And that's what lawyers' jobs are meant to do. The law is supposed to be easily understood by every individual, regardless of IQ, within the normal population. And so law, it's very much like the movie called The Devil's Advocate, which portrayed that very, very well. And Al Pacino, who was the devil in it, he says, how do you think we're taking over this country and the world? He says, we're churning out armies of lawyers every day. That's how we're taking it over.
Yeah.
And it's very, very, very true. It's meant to confuse everything, to make everyone else, the ordinary people, subservient to something they don't understand. And you don't understand it because it's deliberately obfuscated.
You're absolutely right. And this is one of the arguments that many of us in the tax truth movement, if you want to give it a title or a name, have argued that the reason or the government's position on claiming that the income tax is legal is so convoluted and is so cafeteria style, picking here and picking there and then trying to say, well, this is the law. Ed Vieira yesterday was pointing out that you use a legal flow chart. There has to be if-then clauses. There has to be cause and effect. You should be able to draw a line from the very beginning straight through to the end without any breaks in the line that show that this thought process is normal. And basically what I'm trying to say is agree with you that the law has become so complicated it is of no effect.
It's only there to serve an elite who want to confuse whatever they're doing as it passes through the lawyers and then is reiterated or reinterpreted to the public.
Right.
Law can reinterpret as much as they wish, whenever they wish. That's what lawyers are there for.
I've often pointed out to people that, you know, law is nothing more than just a group of people agreeing on rules on how they're going to do something. We used to play the game of Monopoly, and we would sit around and we would all agree on whether or not on the parking lot or go to jail or wherever. Usually it was on the parking lot in the corner, that if you ended up on the parking lot, you got $100 or, you know, 100 Monopoly monies. Or we would make up extra rules, and as long as everybody agreed to it, that wasn't any problem. Mm-hmm. And law, in effect, is the same thing. The problem is now, no, but not everybody gets a chance to agree to it. Not everybody gets a chance to follow it, and we end up with a question as to what the law is. And even though it's specifically written, it's being enforced by the bullies with guns out in the populace. And they're telling you what the law is, and now you have to spend your time, your property, your life essence to go and defend something that you know the rules say you can do and they can't do, but yet they're in this position of bullying power, of physical prowess over
us. They've taken over through, again, the acquiescence of the public over a period of time until it's become the normal. And a generation have grown up accepting this as normal.
That's great. Listen, we got a call coming in. I think it's Edie in Texas. Katie in Texas. Oh, hi, Katie. Are you with us?
Yes, I'm with you. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. That's one of my favorite names.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, I wanted to ask Mr. Watt if he had any books available.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got them up on my site, in fact.
Oh, do you?
I've got
okay.
The Cutting Through 1, 2, and 3 series,
okay.
Where I even go into a lot of the coding that's used within society with the higher Masonic groups, actually, not the low guys, but the high ones. And once you understand it, you can reinterpret the headlines from the newspapers as they pass little jokes to each other. You'd be quite astounded at the language they use.
Did you get that, Katie?
Yes, I did. You don't have anything available in, like, Barnes & Noble or anything like that, do you?
No, I've bypassed all the regulars because, you see, I've had people, too, offering to publish my works. But once you do that, it's authorized to be out there, and the editor then edits out little bits that he thinks are inappropriate.
Yeah.
So I went and bypassed them and did it my own way so that I don't have to be censored.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Okay, Katie, you got his website, right?
Yes, cuttingthroughthematrix.com.
There you go.
All right,
thanks for calling, Katie.
Yes, thank you.
Well, Alan,
uh-huh.
I, I can't emphasize how important it is for people to shake off, as you say, the shackles in their minds of that this is the way that we're living in our society, this way with supposedly depleted energy and all these things is the only way it can be. I believe there is a paradigm shift, and I don't necessarily believe it has to be toward the negative. I think if we can awaken the remnant, if the remnant, those who have eyes to see and ears to hear, those who respond to that internal responsive chord of liberty and freedom will start to get up and talk and influence the people around them, start to make it known that there is something that can be done before this happens, we may be able to change things around. I don't think that the future is set. Even though these guys have been planning this, as you say, for 60 years, which brings me to the thing that we had talked about earlier, you and I privately, and that is that, and you mentioned it, that it came up out of think tanks. These globalists, these internationalists have had think tanks. But why don't we, as freedom-minded people, put together our think tanks and figure out a way to not confront them with mob action, as you said, and that's what they're expecting, but come up with more subtle strategies and tactics to circumvent them and to basically, you know, stop them from what they're doing, monkey wrench them.
Here's the problem. The big think tanks that have tried in the past, and political movements too, to alter our course, are always infiltrated immediately from the very top. They come in, they take over very, very subtly to begin with, but eventually you have a talking head or a bunch of them at the top, again, psychopaths, who are trained to do this, by the way, and they say all the right things, they become the leaders, and before you know it, you're off in a different direction altogether, or you've joined the United Nations and are all part of the problem. It's the same old con game, yeah.
You bring up a very good point. This then goes to the next step, that we as individuals, we as adults, we as liberty-minded members of the remnant need to stand up, shake off the shackles of the society, and what I mean by that is, you know, watching TV, watching all the sports, just bothering ourselves with all the things that we think we have to do, and start learning about freedom and liberty, the rights of man, which is another good book, by the way, to read by Tom Paine. Folks, if you haven't read The Rights of Man for some time, it's time to go back and reread it. Reread the Declaration of Independence. Get into your minds these ideas. And then we individually have to start to think about ways of working the system and throwing roadblocks up, whether it's going after the youth, which is one of the things that I like to do. I like to seed the youth with a liberty virus and give them material and ideas and help them, encourage them to resist the attempts on them. Go along, make it look like you're doing it, but, you know, in your mind, stay true to liberty and freedom. Just as, just, you know, kind of turning the tables on them, Alan. What they were trying to do to Nicaragua. Well, we've got the CIA brochure that the CIA printed up and just flooded through Nicaragua to try and get, as they called the freedom fighters, how to resist the communist Nicaraguan regime. Well, that pamphlet is now available. I have that on a CD, and it's all kinds of wonderful things that people can consider doing. I don't encourage people to go out and break the law, but I consider you to start thinking about things in terms of what's actually right, what's wrong, what leads to liberty, and what leads to slavery. You yourself have to make the decision on what you're going to do, and many of us are family men, and we have obligations. Alan, is there anything else that people can do to fight against this potential?
It's a matter of just fighting it. You don't win any battle until you've conquered yourself. And okay. to run off studying other people's definitions doesn't do anything except following something. You have to be your own champion, and you must come
to your own conclusions of what freedom is or liberty is for yourself by becoming it. It's a change that happens within the individual. And that's the only way it's real. Otherwise, you're just following. If you follow, you're so easily led by the wrong people.
Well, I would agree. We don't need to be followers, but I certainly don't believe that learning from other examples of people who have led in liberty, I don't think that's necessarily following. It's gaining the idea. Aren't you talking about inculcating the beliefs and the concepts of freedom and making them part of your own very nature?
You don't understand. The freedom starts within the individual.
Of course it does.
And that comes as a natural process of work going on as they analyze themselves from beginning to end. You can't understand the world till you've done that first. You
All right.
Your own motivations.
Okay, well, after the break, we'll come back with a few more ideas, folks. All right, America. Back with you on the Republic Broadcasting Network. American Awakening with Michael Herzog, who will be back Monday. I'm Tim Wingate, and I would like to thank our special guest, Alan Watt, for being with us and informing us as to the nature of how bad things are and giving us some ideas on what we can do to make things well and good. And when we left or went to the break, Alan was saying that you cannot understand the concepts of liberty until you have those come up from within yourself. Is that right, Alan?
Yeah, you've got to analyze yourself and who are you as a person? You've got to really analyze that. And,
mm-hmm.
and even your own motivations for wanting certain things. What do you really want? What do you need? What is life about? Where do you stand in proportion with all of the great world that you live in? And others around you, and that means the whole world, everyone in different creeds and cultures and so on. And you realize...
Yeah, to thine own self be true, right?
You have no choice. If you break the law, the natural laws, then you're simply you're blind. You're the blind leading the blind. And
well, then there's going to be some folks who will look within themselves and say, you know, I'd rather be a follower than a leader. We're interested in those who have a positive response to the liberty message. We're looking to encourage the remnant to resist. And there are a lot of good ways of doing that. Alan, I want to thank you for being with us again. And I know you and Michael will probably be in conversation. And I would encourage everybody to tune in again next week. At this time at 2:00 Central to hear Alan again, because you're a regular Friday guest for Michael. So we look forward to that next Friday. Websites, once again, Alan's website is cuttingthroughthematrix.com. He has books and courses and just a ton of material on his site to help you go through and figure out who you are and how to drop the shackles from your mind and to understand your place, in, as he was saying, in this great big world.